Hello, and welcome to The Big Snore. In each episode, I will read a passage from a book, an article, a magazine that runs about 15 to 20 minutes. You can choose to listen to this as a bedtime story, or just a story at any time of the day. Today, the passage I'm reading is from John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath. The ancient, overloaded Hudson creaked and grunted to the highway at Salisaw and turned west, and the sun was blinding. But on the concrete road, Al built up his speed because the flattened springs were not in danger anymore. From Salisaw to Gore is 21 miles, and the Hudson was doing 35 miles an hour. From Gore to Warner, 13 miles. Warner to Chicota, 14 miles. Chicota, a long jump to Henrietta, 34 miles, but a real town at the end of it. Henrietta to Castle, 19 miles, and the sun was overhead, and the red fields, heated by the high sun, vibrated the air. Al, at the wheel, his face purposeful, his whole body listening to the car, his restless eyes jumping from the road to the instrument panel. Al was one with his engine, every nerve listening for weaknesses, for the thumps or squeals, hums and chattering that indicate a change that may cause a breakdown. He had become the soul of the car. Grandma, beside him on the seat, half slept and whimpered in her sleep, opened her eyes to peer ahead, and then dozed again. And Ma sat beside Grandma, one elbow out the window and the skin reddening under the fierce sun. Ma looked ahead too, but her eyes were flat and did not see the road or the fields, the gas stations, the little eating sheds. She did not glance at them as the Hudson went by. Al shifted himself on the broken seat and changed his grip on the steering wheel, and he sighed. "Makes a racket, but I think she's all right. God knows what she'll do if we got to climb a hill with the load we got. Got any hills between here and California, Ma?" Ma turned her head slowly, and her eyes came to life. "Seems to me they's hills," she said. "Course I don't know, but seems to me I heard they's hills and even mountains, big ones." Grandma drew a long, whining sigh in her sleep. Al said, "We'll burn right up if we got climbing to do. Have to throw out some of the stuff. Maybe we shouldn't have bring that preacher." "You'll be glad of that preacher before we're through," said Ma. "That preacher'll help us." She looked ahead at the gleaming road again. Al steered with one hand and put the other on the vibrating gear shift lever. He had difficulty in speaking. His mouth formed the words silently before he said them aloud. "Ma?" She slowly looked around at him, her head swaying a little with the car's motion. "Ma, you scared of going? You scared of going to a new place?" Her eyes grew thoughtful and soft. "A little," she said. "Only it ain't like scared so much. I'm just sitting here and waiting. When something happens that I got to do something, I'll do it." "Ain't you thinking, what's it gonna be like when we get there? Ain't you scared it won't be nice like we thought?" "No," she said quickly. "No, I ain't. You can't do that. I can't do that. It's too much. Living too many lives. Up ahead, there's 1,000 lives we might live. But when it comes, it'll only be one. If I go ahead in all of them, it's too much. You got to live ahead because you're so young, but it's just the road going by for me. And it's just how soon they're going to want to eat some pork bones." Her face tightened. "That's all I can do. I can't do no more. All the rest would get upset if I'd done more than that. They all depend on me, just thinking about that." Grandma yawned shrilly and opened her eyes. She looked wildly about. "I got to get out, praise God," she said. "First clump of brush," said Al. "They's one up ahead." "Brush or no brush, I got to get out, I tell ya." And she began to whine. "I got to get out. I got to get out." Al speeded up, and when he came to the low brush, he pulled up short. Ma threw the door open and half pulled the struggling old lady out beside the road and into the bushes. And Ma held her so Grandma would not fall when she squatted. On top of the truck, the others stirred to life. Their faces were shining with sunburn they could not escape. Tom and Casey and Noah and Uncle John let themselves wearily down. Ruthie and Winfield swarmed down the sides boards and went off into the bushes. Connie helped Rose of Sharon gently down. Under the canvas, Grandpa was awake, his head sticking out, but his eyes were drugged and watery and still senseless. He watched the others, but there was little recognition in his watching. Tom called to him. "Want to come down, Grandpa?" The old eyes turned listlessly to him. "No," said Grandpa. For a moment, the fierceness came into his eyes. "I ain't a-goin'. I tell you, gonna stay like Muley." And then he lost interest again. Ma came back, helping Grandma up the bank to the highway. "Tom," she said, "get that pan of bones under the canvas and back. We got to eat somethin'." Tom got the pan and passed it around, and the family stood by the roadside, gnawing the crisp particles from the pork bones. "Sure lucky we bring these along," said Pa. "Get so stiff up there, can't hardly move. Where's the water?" "Ain't it up with you?" Ma asked. "I set out that gallon jug." Pa climbed the sides and looked under the canvas. "It ain't here. We must have forgot it." Thirst set in instantly. Winfield moaned, "I want a drink. I want a drink." The men licked their lips, suddenly conscious of their thirst, and a little panic started. Al felt the fear growing. "We'll get water first service station we come to. We need some gas, too." The family swarmed up the truck sides. Ma helped Grandma in and got in beside her. Al started the motor, and they moved on. Castle to Payden, 25 miles, and the sun passed the zenith and started down. And the radiator cap began to jiggle up and down, and steam started to whish out. Near Payden, there was a shack beside the road and two gas pumps in front of it, and beside a fence, a water faucet and a hose. Al drove in and nosed the Hudson up to the hose. As they pulled in, a stout man, red of face and arms, got up from a chair behind the gas pumps and moved towards them. He wore brown corduroys and suspenders and a polo shirt, and he had a cardboard sun helmet painted silver on his head. The sweat beaded on his nose and under his eyes and formed streams in the wrinkles of his neck. He strolled towards the truck, looking truculent and stern. "You folks aim to buy anything? Gasoline or stuff?" he asked. Al was out already, unscrewing the steaming radiator cap with the tips of his fingers, jerking his hand away to escape the spurt when the cap should come loose. "Need some gas, mister." "Got any money?" "Sure. Think we're begging?" The truculence left the fat man's face. "Well, that's all right, folks. Help yourself to water." And he hastened to explain. "Road is full of people. Come in, use water, dirty up the toilet, and then, by God, they'll steal stuff and don't buy nothing. Got no money to buy with. Come begging a gallon gas to move on." Tom dropped angrily to the ground and moved towards the fat man. "We're paying our way," he said fiercely. "You got no call to give us a going over. We ain't asked you for nothing." "I ain't," the fat man said quickly. The sweat began to soak through his short-sleeved polo shirt. "Just help yourself to water and go use the toilet if you want." Winfield had got the hose. He drank from the end and then turned the stream over to his head and face and emerged dripping. "It ain't cool," he said. "I don't know what the country's coming to," the fat man continued. His complaint had shifted now, and he was no longer talking to or about the Jodes. 50-60 cars of folks go by every day, folks all moving west with kids and household stuff. Where are they going? What they gonna do?" "Doing the same thing as us," said Tom. "Going someplace to live. Trying to get along, that's all." "Well, I don't know what the country's coming to. I just don't know. Here's me, trying to get along too. Think any of them big new cars stops here? No, sir. They go on to them yellow-painted company stations in town. They don't stop no place like this. Most folks stop here ain't got nothing. Al flipped the radiator cap, and it jumped into the air with a head of steam behind it, and a hollow, bubbling sound came out of the radiator. On top of the truck, the suffering hound dog crawled timidly to the edge of the load and looked over, whimpering, toward the water. Uncle John climbed up and lifted him down by the scruff of the neck. For a moment, the dog staggered on stiff legs, and then he went to lap the mud under the faucet. In the highway, the cars whizzed by, glistening in the heat, and the hot wind of their going fanned into the service station yard. Al filled the radiator with the hose.
"It ain't that I'm trying to get trade out of rich folks," the fat man went on. "I'm just trying to get trade. Why, the folks that stops here begs gasoline and they trades for gasoline. I could show you in my back room the stuff they'll trade for gas and oil. Beds and baby buggies and pots and pans. One family traded a doll their kid had for a gallon. And what am I going to do with the stuff? Open a junk shop? Why, one fella wanted to give me his shoes for a gallon. And if I was that kind of fella, I bet I could get..." He glanced at Ma and stopped.
Jim Casey had wet his head, and the drops still coursed down his high forehead, and his muscled neck was wet, and his shirt was wet. He moved over beside Tom.
"It ain't the people's fault," he said. "How'd you like to sell the bed you sleep on for a tank full of gas?"
"I know it ain't their fault. Every person I talk to is on the move for a goddamn good reason.
What's the country coming to? That's what I want to know. What's it coming to? Fella can't make a living no more. Folks can't make a living farming. I ask you, what's it coming to? I can't figure her out. Everybody asks. They can't figure her out. Fella wants to trade his shoes so he can get 100 miles on. I can't figure her out."
He took off his silver hat and wiped his forehead with his palm. And Tom took off his cap and wiped his forehead with it. He went to the hose and wet the cap through and squeezed it and put it on again. Ma worked a tin cup out through the side bars of the truck, and she took water to Grandma and to Grandpa on top of the load. She stood on the bars and handed the cup to Grandpa, and he wet his lips and then shook his head and refused more. The old eyes looked up at Ma in pain and bewilderment for a moment before the awareness receded again. Al started the motor and backed the truck to the gas pump.
"Fill her up. She'll take about 7, said Al. "We'll give her 6 so she don't spill none."
The fat man put the hose in the tank.
"No, sir," he said. "I just don't know what the country's coming to, relief and all."
Casey said, "I've been walking round in the country. Everybody's asking that, what we come into. Seems to me we don't never come to nothing. Always on the way, always going and going. Why don't folks think about that? There's movement now, people moving. We know why and we know how. Moving 'cause they got to. That's why folks always move. Moving 'cause they want something better than what they got. And that's the only way they'll ever get it. Wanting it and needing it, they'll go out and get it. It's being hurt that makes folks mad to fightin'. I've been walking round the country and hearing folks talk like you."
The fat man pumped the gasoline and the needle turned on the pump dial, recording the amount.
"Yeah, but what's it coming to? That's what I want to know."
Tom broke in irritably. "Well, you ain't ever gonna know. Casey tries to tell you and you just say the same thing over. I've seen fellows like you before. You ain't asking nothing. You're just singing kind of song. What we coming to? You don't want to know. Country's moving around, going places. There's folks dying all around. Maybe you'll die pretty soon, but you won't know nothing. I seen too many fellows like you. You don't want to know nothing. Just sing yourself to sleep with a song. What we coming to?"
He looked at the gas pump, rusted and old, and at the shack behind it, built of old lumber, the nail holes of its first use still showing through the paint that had been brave, the brave yellow paint that had tried to imitate the big company stations in town. But the paint couldn't cover the old nail holes and the old cracks in the lumber, and the paint could not be renewed. The imitation was a failure, and the owner had known it was a failure,
And inside the open door of the shack, Tom saw the oil barrels, only two of them, and the candy counter with the stale candies and licorice whips turning brown with age, and cigarettes. He saw the broken chair and the fly screen with a rusted hole in it, and the littered yard that should have been graveled, and behind, the cornfield drying and dying in the sun. Beside the house, the little stock of used tires and retreaded tires, and he saw for the first time the fat man's cheap washed pants and his cheap polo shirt and his paper hat. He said, "I didn't mean to sound off at you, mister. It's the heat. You ain't got nothing. Pretty soon, you'll be on the road yourself. Ain't it? And it ain't tractors that'll put you there. It's them pretty yellow stations in town. Folks is moving," he said ashamedly. "And you'll be moving, mister." The fat man's hand slowed on the pump and stopped while Tom spoke. He looked worriedly at Tom. "How'd you know?" he asked helplessly. "How'd you know we was already talking about packing and moving up west?" Casey answered him. "It's everybody," he said. "Here's me that used to give all my fight against the devil because I figured the devil was the enemy. But they's something worse than the devil got hold of the country, and it ain't gonna let go till it's chopped loose. Ever see one of them Gila monsters take hold, mister? Grabs hold and you chop him in two and his head hangs on. Chop him at the neck and his head hangs on. Got to take a screwdriver and pry his head apart to get him loose. And while he's laying there, poison is dripping and dripping into the hole he's made with his teeth." He stopped and looked sideways at Tom. The fat man stared hopelessly straight ahead. His hands started turning the crank slowly. "I don't know what we're coming to," he said softly. Over by the water hose, Connie and Rose of Sharon stood together, talking secretly. Connie washed the tin cup and felt the water with his finger before he filled the cup again. Rose of Sharon watched the cars go by on the highway. Connie held out the cup to her. "This water ain't cool, but it's wet," he said. She looked at him and smiled secretly. She was all secrets now that she was pregnant. Secrets and little silences that seemed to have meanings. She was pleased with herself, and she complained about things that didn't really matter, and she demanded services of Connie that were silly, and both of them knew they were silly. Connie was pleased with her, too, and filled with wonder that she was pregnant. He liked to think he was in on the secrets she had. When she smiled slyly, he smiled slyly, too, and they exchanged confidences and whispers. The world had drawn close around them, and they were in the center of it. Or rather, Rose of Sharon was in the center of it, with Connie making a small orbit around her. Everything, they said, was a kind of secret. She drew her eyes from the highway. "I ain't very thirsty," she said daintily, "but maybe I ought to drink." And he nodded, for he knew well what she meant. She took the cup and rinsed her mouth and spat and then drank the cupful of tepid water. "Want another?" he asked. That was a passage from John Steinbeck's book, The Grapes of Wrath. You were listening to The Big Snore. Until next time.